It's Saturday, January 21st, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California.
GeekSpeak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Today's rundown, geek news, then your calls. We'll be doing some talking about the local tech stuff that's going on, but in general, we're here for you. During the second half of the show, we'll focus on you. And you can take a time out of your day to give us a ring, and we'll see how we can help you or confuse you. And you will be confused, because it's Geek Speak.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool. Eliminate the ninnies and the twins.
This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA, and Miles Elam, Technical Trainer at Surf Control. Hello, gentlemen. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lyle.
We also are lucky to have Chris Dumphy. I guess you're still a slacker, right, Chris? You haven't found a job?
I am working on starting a company, so that officially counts me as slacker for the time being.
I'd say that starting a company is a pretty busy process. What's the company, Chris?
It's going to be a mobile software company, taking my experience back at Palm and doing it my own thing now.
Chris Dumphy from San Francisco. Welcome, geeks. We're going to start the news off with Mr. Cleveland. Sean?
Chris Dumphy, making mobile devices cooler.
Oh, yeah.
I guess the big news today, or this week, was that the draft 802.11n proposal.
I'm sorry, what is that?
This is the next generation wireless technology. It's Wi-Fi based off some new standard that I don't even want to get into now. But needless to say, it's 802.11n. It's compatible with G, 802.11g, and 802.11b before that. So 802.11b is a standard everybody supports. It's in most coffee shops. It's the original slow Wi-Fi connection.
Relatively slow.
Yeah, the next generation was G. G is backward compatible with B. Supposedly it was four times faster. I don't know. It's probably twice as fast. I think it gives rates of maybe 2 to 3 megabytes per second if you're lucky. This new
one, which is a lot faster than dial-up connection.
Oh, much, much faster. This new 802.11n proposal is four times faster than G. So they're saying 108 megabits per second. Since there are 8 bits in a byte, you do the math, and it works out to about 12 megabytes per second, which is four times faster than G. So expect it to be maybe twice as fast if you're lucky.
So we had B, and then we had G, and then this is twice or four times, but really two times faster than
we'll
G.
We'll see. Maybe okay. This is using a new transmission technology called MIMO, multiple in, multiple out, which basically says it has multiple antennas, so it can receive more than, you know, one wireless signal, which is kind of great because, let's say there's occlusion with a wall, you know, signals bounce, that sort of thing. If you got multiple antennas, hopefully they're spread out across your notebook, possibly you might get better transmission rates. So we'll see.
Actually, better than the rates, the real advantage of 802.11n and the MIMO radios is actually much better range. So you'll still have fast speed even at the extreme ranges of your wireless network, which is a big, big improvement.
Do you know what the range is going to be? Because I couldn't find information about that.
A lot of the wireless routers out use the 802.11n technology because the standard's not done yet. They're calling them just MIMO routers or super range routers, and they're saying like, you know, 1,500 feet range.
Okay, so and what I'm wondering, though, is how does this tie in with, for example, WiMAX? WiMAX is a wireless spec that's meant for kilometers,
mile. WiMAX is very different, and different kind of radios and different kind of stuff. WiMAX is designed to have, as you said, range measured in miles or kilometers. This is just extends your home network, and 802.11n will get rid of a lot of the dead spots in your house. Like right now, even in my small apartment, there are certain places that I can't carry my laptop to without dropping the connection. If I had an 802.11n router or one of the ones that are available now, that's a MIMO router. MIMO router, I'd be able to go anywhere in the house and keep a fast connection. And, you know, that's the kind of the goal of the technology.
But we're really going to have to get security. We have to take security on wireless very seriously with this kind of a thing, because it's no longer, you know, your neighbor. This could be someone down the street possibly getting your signal now.
I think that's great. I love the idea of being able to get on free with my neighbors.
Yeah, whatever, hippie.
Except if they're downloading something and sucking your bandwidth, you know that.
I got bandwidth to spare.
Okay.
Yeah, the bandwidth issue doesn't worry me so much as the security issue. For example, many people are running Windows, and if they're not patching their system, even if they have a hardware firewall router, you know, Linksys, D-Link, NetLink, one of those, if someone's connecting to your network and they have a virus because they haven't been as diligent as you have, then they can infect you because they're on the same network.
Right.
So, Miles, I'm going to jump over to you. Thank you, Sean, very much for the whole new Wi-Fi stuff coming online. I think that it's we really know this is going to work because of the cool acronyms they're using. That's how I know that it's going to function.
cool stuff.
Yeah.
It's all about the acronym.
It all is about the acronym, really. I mean, that's how you name technology. Miles?
These are two issues, but they're, I think, related to one another.
What are they?
Yeah.
I'm feverish with interpretation. Yes, yes.
New York City, first of all, is going to be opening up cell phone service in their subway stations so that, you know, everyone can get on the phone at any point. Subways being underground, under large amounts of concrete.
And just at stations, right? Not actually on the tubes?
Right. The moving trains will not have service. And at the same time, I think whenever I come across a story like this of the people calling saying, oh, well, we need more cell phones around,
you know, right,
and worrying about the health issues. Well, speaking of those health issues, this according to the BBC News, there was some research done by scientists from Leeds University, the University of Cancer Research, and the University of Nottingham, interviewed 2,700 people. And spoke with 966 of those people were diagnosed with glioma, a type of brain cancer, very common. And 1,716 of them did not have the condition. And looked at the studies and how much they used their phones and did not find a correlation between increased cell phone use and increases of brain cancer.
I'm not surprised that that was found. But that's kind of reassuring, I guess.
Right. But at the same time, it's like, this has been a recurring theme, people worrying about this. And this is some research that's done with what I consider fairly, at least statistically significant sample of people.
Thank you. Now, so
and this is over the course of 10 years.
Okay. Yeah. But that still means that people will be using cell phones in subway stations in New York.
Right.
Which still is quite annoying. And, of course, the hazard, of course, is talking on the phone and walking onto a track, accidentally walking off. You'll see that every once in a while.
Right.
What are you talking about? Yeah.
Well, this isn't like someone driving. And
yeah,
at the same time, are you really going to the subway station for some peace and quiet?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
you're hanging out there for quietness, right? Yeah.
Okay. Give this a local angle, actually. San Francisco, the Muni station's got cell phone service just a few months ago.
Oh, really?
You can use your cell phones underground in Muni and over the next few months, all the BART tunnels under Oakland and Berkeley are going to have cell phone service.
At the stations or on the trains themselves?
Actually, on the trains as well. And it seems like the most common use is less people talking on their phone, because you certainly couldn't talk over the roar of BART, but is people being online with their phones and doing online data applications and stuff.
Watching videos on the computer.
Yeah, watching videos, doing their email. You know, like BlackBerry users can't be without getting their email every 3 minutes. So this they were going into withdrawal on this, going under the Bay Bridge tunnel and stuff.
It's funny, I have one of those now.
Are you one of those guys that has one of those BlackBerries?
It's like whenever I have to wait somewhere, you know, stand in line or just wait for something,
yeah,
I pull my BlackBerry out.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to enjoy the scenery or chat with someone you don't know, but no,
chat
I totally
with someone
do.
You don't know?
I do it every day. So a couple weeks ago, we talked about BlackBerry and how there was this patent pending that might kill the company, and it was pretty much like, it was kind of a scare, because in reality, there's so many people using BlackBerries, that company's not going anywhere. We then covered the story that that's not going to happen, right? I mean, your BlackBerry's safe, Sean?
I think it's still pending.
It's still pending.
Yeah.
Chris,
it's a
are
piece
you,
of technology that a company is suing them over because of the fact that they're using it and they own the patent for it.
Right.
And I guess RIM has some workaround, but it's going to require updates to everyone's BlackBerry, and it's not going to work like IT people who administer email to BlackBerry clients. It's not going to work the same, so there's going to have to be a lot of changes to companies.
Well, when we're talking about portable devices, I'll mention a company by the name World Tracker, world-tracker.com, is tracking cell phones via GPS cell phones via towers.
No, it's not GPS cell phones. This is supposed to be this other way.
GSM.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be trafficking cell phones without the use of GPS. That was the issue.
Right, so specifically, not GPS, that's right, I'm sorry, just with GSM, just with the phone systems and the towers. And basically, it's a UK service called World Tracker, and first a text message is sent to the trackee, and if they reply yes or something like that, they can be tracked. Which is kind of a cool feature. It would be neat for parents. It might be useful for delivery systems. The focal point for the targeting is 50 to 500 meters, so it's not really accurate. But it's kind of interesting that this company is doing that. And I guess they're just reading the logs or reading the information from the towers and triangulating using that. Kind of scary, but at least they ask you first. That's a good thing.
But if you're in the shower and your girlfriend happens to have access to your phone and that SMS comes in, you know, you could be in a lot of tracking trouble.
Especially if people start getting used to it, right? All right, Sean, next news story, sir.
I came across this. I thought people might be interested about the iMac Intel Core Duo. The new iMac computer.
The Macintosh that has the Intel.
So they're on sale now. Then people are buying them and talking about their, you know, how they feel, kind of their first impressions with.
Here it comes.
With the unit. What?
I'm
really curious about.
What are people saying about the new Intel Mac? I mean, there's a lot of people that have been waiting to buy a Mac because they knew this was coming. Is it time to do that, or is this still a wait stage?
Well, I think people. It's funny. They say I don't think it's a wait stage. I mean, people need faster computers, and this seems to offer that.
Mm-hmm.
The software's not there yet.
All the support software.
The Intel-based Macintosh software, there's not as many applications, so you've kind of got to use the Rosetta software to run your current Macintosh applications.
What's Rosetta?
You tell me. I don't use a Macintosh.
Miles, what's Rosetta?
Rosetta is a translation software that allows you to run PowerPC-based Mac software.
So the older Intel computer chips?
Right.
A big concern would be things like Photoshop. Adobe Photoshop's not supported on the Intel Macintosh platform. Even though they have Photoshop on Windows, which is Intel-based chips and AMD-based chips, and they have a Macintosh version, they do not have a Macintosh Intel version.
Right.
So it has to interpret it, which means it's going to be a lot slower.
Half as fast as iMac G5.
According to some results
I've seen online.
Right.
And but actually, the iMac with Intel-based software is not 4 times faster. It seems to be more like 1 to 1.2 times faster.
Than which ones?
Than the iMac G5.
Okay. Because at the same time, it's the Intel chips that are going into the laptops. So I could actually see the argument for that 4 to 5 times faster applying to the G4 chips that are still in the laptops.
Right.
Yeah, and actually that was Apple's claim, is that the laptop is 4 to 5 times faster and the desktop was 2 to 3 times faster. And, of course, they were not using they were using just synthetic scientific benchmarks and not application benchmarks, which are always because the applications are held back by a lot of other constraints in the system, like, you know, how fast is the graphics, how fast is the hard drive, how fast is the memory. And so even though the processor is that much faster, there's all the rest of the system didn't magically get super upgraded.
All right.
So I kind of want to explain a little about what the Core Duo is. We all know what that is, right?
Well, everyone in this room does. What is the Core Duo?
Well, it's not the Pentium 4.
All right. So Intel had the Pentium, and it went up to Pentium 4, and that's like the most recent Pentium processor, which is fast and beautiful.
No, it's not. So the Pentium 4 is the desktop processor. And the Pentium Extreme Edition is the high end of the desktop processor.
Okay.
Apple's not using that chip. So what they have announced is the iMac, which is a big screen with a computer built into it, kind of like a giant iPod on its side. that requires a much cooler running processor, because the Pentium 4 is a very hot running processor. It would not work in an iMac, and it would not work in a notebook. So what they've done is the old Pentium M, which is kind of the Pentium 3, was updated.
M stands for mobile.
It stands for mobile, and it was part of the Centrino branding effort by Intel.
Okay.
Centrino basically said, if you use Intel's motherboard chipset, the Pentium M processor, and the wireless chip, well, then you can use the Centrino name, and we'll give you money to help you do your commercials and advertising. So this is that processor, but it's now a dual core. It has independent cache. It's a very fast chip. At higher speeds, it's even it's quite the performer. And this is running at 2 gigahertz, and it runs a lot cooler. So this is that chip, and this is kind of what Intel is moving forward with for many reasons, because they just can't crank the Pentium 4 as fast as it needs to go to get to the performance that everyone expects.
Right.
But this chip, as they crank the speed up, especially the dual core, it's going to be quite a performer.
Now, AMD didn't do that kind of backward step of like, I mean, Intel went Pentium 3, then Pentium 4, and then Pentium 3. You know, that was a really good chip. Let's put two cores on the motherboard.
Well, they said, let's make that a mobile chip.
Yeah.
And that's where it became the Pentium M.
So
and they kind of updated a lot of the technologies.
Right, and now they've split that into two processors on one chip, so it's a double the power, double the bang, if you will, for the buck. But AMD didn't do that with its mobile. They designed a lower-end processor out of the box, right, to kind of have a second pack. Can you explain how AMD's doing?
Yeah, AMD's kind of... So there's the Athlon XP processor, which is the K7. They use K6, K7, K8. The K8 is the Athlon 64. That is a whole new core, and it's got the HyperTransport built into it. It's a really high-speed chip-to-chip interconnect. It's got large onboard cache. It's got a memory controller built into the chip, where Intel does not have a memory controller built into the chip. They have to use a separate chip to do their communications with memory, which on the desktop side is a big reason why AMD chips are faster than Intel.
Okay.
A lot of other things going on. But yeah, AMD, you know, their mobile chips, I'm not too up to speed, but they don't compete anywhere near with Intel.
Okay, so if you're going to do a mobile, if you're looking for a good mobile chip, you really want to do the Pentium M dual.
There's a 64-bit mobile chip, I think, from AMD, but it's kind of a desktop replacement, not something you'd put in your bag and carry over your shoulder everywhere.
Well, thank you, Sean, so much for covering Macintosh News. I think this is the first time you have done that.
Yeah, I'm actually amazed.
Sean knows processors, so it's a really good...
I'm just really interested in how Apple's going to be using this. And what's also interesting, big piece of news, is Apple's not going to stop people from running Windows on Macintoshes.
Strange.
So people are just trying to figure out how to do that now. The biggest problem is the BIOS. This is the basic input output system for PCs.
I recall a news story a year ago, I think Miles brought it in, that the BIOS is going away, that the newer boards aren't going to have a BIOS.
Apple's not using a BIOS. They're using this extensible firmware interface, I think is what it's called.
Kind of like plug-and-play firmware.
It's very advanced, much more advanced than the PC. So,
well, compared to a BIOS, everything is really advanced.
Yeah, sure. BIOS is like one of the prime... I mean, before you had hard drives or any kind of, portal media, if you will, you had the BIOS was the computer. You had everything loaded in that, and if you ran programs, you had to kind of load them into memory and all that stuff manually. So the BIOS comes back from the very first computers, and we're still using
PCs.
First PCs, and we're still using it today on every computer.
So
except now,
those listening, when you first turn on a PC and you see that screen with all that information, you probably don't know what it means. It tells you what the memory is, the processor. It does something. It takes forever to get past, and then you go into the operating system. Yeah, so Macintosh has done away with that. They have a much more elegant solution, and to run Windows now has to be updated to understand how the system looks at hardware.
And actually, the new BIOS system that Apple is using, the extensible firmware system, is already in use on the Intel Itanium systems running Windows XP 64-bit edition. So Windows, that particular edition of Windows has already been updated to use this type of firmware, so it's very likely that Windows Vista will certainly support that type of firmware. And
Chris, are you using a cell phone to talk to us today?
No, I'm on a regular house phone.
You're doing a lot of clipping. So go on, you were saying?
I was just saying that type of firmware is been in use actually for a while with Windows running Windows on the Intel Itanium processor, their high-end server processor.
64-bit processor. Huh?
Yeah, the Intel's, they call it Titanic because it kind of sank in the market.
Well, and the thing is, it's not that this isn't an Apple technology at all. It's what Intel wants to do. It's what everybody really wants to do is get rid of the BIOS. But because of backwards compatibility issues, it's really hard to do that. And so since Macintosh is going in the first time just brand new into Intel or x86 processors, they don't have to deal with the BIOS.
Well, according to one analyst I read, Gateway actually produced a media center with EFI. and they got Windows XP to run on it. So it's not
and
like
it makes
it's
sense
impossible.
When it's a complete package kind of thing. It does make sense.
Just
to
don't
do
expect to install Windows XP just straight out of the box.
And the real, I think the thing about this is that the all the cards and peripherals that you plug into a motherboard that has this type of technology has to be different than a BIOS-based situation.
Right.
So what you do is, you know, if you put on a new computer and you say, by the way, all your cards, any PCI or cards that have to be loaded by BIOS, you have to actually load this in a different way. All of a sudden, it's very hard to make that transition.
The cards aren't any different.
The cards aren't. I thought the driver loads on the cards were different.
No, they're the same.
The cards are physically the same, but they have to have a different software support.
That's exactly what the difference is.
Okay, I'm going to do one more news story. Miles, go for it, man.
We've all heard about a new nuclear plant wants to get built. People will protest. A new coal plant wants to be built. People will protest. Fossil fuels, you know, people are going to be up in arms and want to move to better alternatives.
Because we're very quickly destroying our environment with all the energy we're using.
Right. What I thought was curious was the story here found talking about upstate New York, because New Yorkers are running out of power. They need power generation. They were looking to set up a bank of windmills.
Uh-huh.
And there are some local residents that are up in arms over this.
It's pretty common. Windmills are an ugly blight on the landscape.
Windmills kill birds.
Well, that's actually a misnomer. But
that windmills kill birds or that they're ugly on the landscape?
Have windmills ever killed birds? Yes. Compared to, like, for example, the amount of birds that are killed by household cats.
Or telephone lines
or any
or phone
of the,
I should say power lines.
Right, are absolutely minuscule.
Right.
It's really a non-issue.
Now, so what about the issue of the unsightly nature of covering a hillside with windmills? Is that the problem?
That is one aspect, and people do talk about it that way. And let me also preface this or talk about the fact that this is a minority of the residents of Hartsville, New York, that are protesting this. But they were bringing up really interesting things that I felt like sharing with everyone.
Let's share those in just a moment.
Sure.
GeekSpeak is proudly sponsored by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton, offering color printing, design, computer rentals, delivered office supplies, shipping via FedEx, UPS, DHL, and more. Details at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak, and now it's time for you to call in and join us. With questions or comments about technology, fellow web geek and our phone answerer, Rick Philman, awaits your call with questions and comments of technology. He awaits with bated breath. Well, he might be bated breath depending on how many call. So the phone numbers, 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can use the internet. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us to get in our email queue. Tune in tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. when KOSP presents another edition of Utopia, Youthtopia, discussing teens and food. A panel of local teens will present stories about eating disorders and diet, and they'll talk with a therapist who treats eating disorders. That's Youthtopia tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. This is KOSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. The geeks this morning are Chris Dumphy in San Francisco via phone, Sean Cleveland here in the air with me, and of course, Miles Elam. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please join our conversation. Rick Philman, our phone answer, is standing by to take your calls of questions or comments about technology. Those questions can range from anything about technology. Yes, you heard me. You can ask us anything. Most of it we won't know, but some of it we will. 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or by going to the internet with your web browser, visit geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Miles, you were saying about the upstate residents of New York.
Or talking about the apparent health effects, or what they were saying the health effects were. It ranged from the whirring of the machinery in there was equivalent to torture. Audible torture devices.
Because it makes so much noise?
Yeah, they're just saying it's this droning that would get to you. That these, when the sunlight hits the spinning blades, that it would cause strokes. and or mange in cattle. And then others claiming that women living near the wind farms are having as many as 5 menstrual cycles a month. Now, I would like to say publicly to all of our, to everyone that, yeah, that's not really going to happen.
You mean none of those things?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Or not at least because of the windmills.
Right. But it's curious to know, when people don't like something, they will, anything that will seem like it correlates or anything that seems bad or yeah. as a possibility in their head, they'll say, oh, look, it can do that.
Sure.
And so it really comes down to people when something, for example, an energy issue comes up, to be able to look at it critically and say.
So you're equating basically, you're saying, look, people will go out and protest nuclear, they'll protest coal, they'll protest petroleum in general, power sources. Everybody's using power. Most people are using a lot of power. And when you see someone, when you see a group of people protesting windmills and they come up with things that are bad about them, that the motivation for coming up with something bad has not necessarily to do with the technology or the implementation of what's going on with power production, but instead with people's fundamental concerns and fears.
Well, sometimes it has to do with the technology, but yes, many times it doesn't matter what the issue is. If you don't like something, you will, you know, in some cases, invent things.
Yeah, right. All right, we're taking your calls, questions, and comments on technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us to get in our email inbox. I want to go ahead and take an email from Peter. And Peter sent an email to us earlier this week, and he uses a USB/FireWire drive. He has a brand new one, and he wants to use this on a Windows machine and on a Macintosh machine. And the question is, what does he do? So, Chris Dunphy, you do a lot of Mac and Windows back and forth as well as I do. What is the right way to deal with a hard drive, an external hard drive that you want to use on both environments?
Well, the key is to make sure that the hard drive is formatted as FAT32, which on the Mac would be labeled as like Windows format. And one of the tricks to doing this is if you get an unformatted external hard drive, Windows, because Windows really wants you to use NTFS, it won't format an external hard drive as larger than 32 gigabytes. It'll break it up in a lot of different partitions. But Mac OS Tiger, at least, will, if you plug it in, you can go into the disk admin tool and pick the format for the disk and say, yeah, format this disk as FAT32, erase everything on it, and then you'll have your big external hard drive that you can plug into both the Mac and the PC, and it'll work nicely.
Well, so I have a larger than, what do you say was the max on the Windows?
32 gigabytes.
Yes, I've got I think 150 and a 200 gig external that I got a Seagate one. Large drive, and I use it on both my machines, and I never actually formatted it. It was formatted when I got it. So
how it came, yeah.
But it was FAT. It must have been FAT32 because I can read and write to it on both environments.
Yep, it probably came FAT32 formatted. A lot of the external drives come that way. And as long as the drive is less than 250 gigabytes, FAT32 works just fine. I think there might be some issues when the hard drives get mega honking huge, but
okay. Is that a technical term?
It is.
So basically you're saying you have to do FAT32 so that both environments can read it. If you have Macintosh OS 10 Tiger, the most recent version, you can format it as it might be called Windows formattable or whatever. But
it will say FAT32. It'll say Windows FAT32.
So basically, to format it to use on both machines, you want to do on your Tiger. What if you've got like an earlier Macintosh, like an OS 10 2 or something like that? Is that going to be a problem for you? You're going to have to find somebody with Tiger?
I had a lot of trouble before I upgraded to Tiger, being able to successfully format a large hard drive on the Macintosh. There seemed to be some bugs in their formatting code.
Luckily, Macintosh users seem to come together in groups. So what you want to do is get together with, when you get a new hard drive like this, and you want to get together with a whole bunch of Macintosh users and find someone that has a Tiger. It'll take only a little bit to format the drive as FAT32. It's very important, though, of course. When you do format a drive, you lose all the data on it. So be prepared for that. All right. We're going to go ahead and start going to calls because, hey, that's why we're here, right? We're always here for that. We're going to go to my old residence neighborhood of Lompico. Larry, welcome to...
Hello.
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 I'm calling about the misnomer.
What's the misnomer?
Well, the misnomer, it was about windmills.
Okay, go for it. What do you got?
Well, the Altamont Pass you heard of the Altamont Pass?
Of course. It's probably the largest wind generation in California.
Yeah, there was extensive study done that, indeed, the windmills were killing birds.
Yeah, those are the windmills up in the Livermore Hills between Livermore and Tracy.
And so the person that used the word misnomer needs to do a little bit more research on the subject before they start talking about it.
But Miles, he's talking to you, man.
I'm terribly sorry. Was this because this is in a migration alley? Or
Correct. Okay. But it doesn't mean that I disagree that windmills are an issue. Windmills are a great thing. It's just you got to do a little bit more research. What they're going to do is make the windmills bigger. Slower.
So that the blades slower.
Yeah, so, but the point being, though, that you got to do your research before you talk about it.
Thank you. And don't get me wrong, I love to be corrected.
Yes, we always do. If you hear something wrong, or when you hear something wrong on GeekSpeak, please feel free to correct us. We'd love the input. Larry, thank you. Was there any other thing you'd want to address?
No, thank you.
Thank you so much for calling.
I was so close to mentioning that because I did hear, but I didn't have enough information to really talk about it.
I am terribly sorry out there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we lost Chris when I took Larry's call. But Chris, if you'd like to call back and join us, you're welcome to do so. We're going to go to Paso Robles now, and I don't know who this is in Paso Robles. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
This is Ed.
Ed, hi. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, I have a ISA card controller for a machine. And I was wondering if this any way of using on a, might say, quote unquote, more modern computer.
Mm-hmm. What's the card? What does the ISA card do?
The it controls a engraver. And if there's like a box you can add on to a machine that only has PCI slots.
Right. Yeah. So ISA is an old 16-bit connector.
We're talking about inside
the computer.
Type machines.
Right. Yeah. So what you're doing is you're adding a card that adds functionality, in this case engraving. Modern computers use PCI slots, and it's physically a different slot, and it's a 32-bit slot. You will not be able to... You're going to be hard-pressed to find a modern computer that actually has ISA. But you know, you could probably find... an older computer with ISA, with decent performance at dirt cheap prices.
But let me ask you, when you say there's a connector that controls the engraver, I'm assuming you have software that controls that engraver, and that software probably runs on DOS or an older version of Windows. Is that true?
It runs on 98.
Well, that's not that old.
No.
The fear I would have is that, I guess you could get a brand new machine and install Windows 98 on it, and if it had an ISA card, you'd probably still be okay. Do you know what the interface between the ISA card and this engraver is?
It's a proprietary cable. Mm-hmm. Similar to, I can't think of it now.
What does it look like? Just describe it. I know it's kind of a difficult thing to describe.
What can I say about it? It looks like a... I can't think of it now.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. So basically, it's something that you're not going to be able to get a device inside a newer machine to do this.
Can you
find an ISA board?
You know, there are bridge cards, and these are cards that convert old ISA slots to PCI.
Okay.
It could work for you. I would go to google.com mm-hmm. and just do a search on... PCI to ISA bridge card, and you'll see a bunch of links come up. And the way it works is the card plugs into the PCI slot on your motherboard, and then you plug the ISA card in sideways into that card.
So that you have enough room.
So you have enough room inside the case, yeah, because they can't stack on top of each other.
But you're still going to need a device driver, though, and device drivers don't tend to migrate from Windows 98 to XP, so unless there's newer...
You
still need to run Windows 98.
Windows 98, unless you could find it, exactly, you could find a driver that supports the newer OS.
My feeling, depending on what's the reason for the upgrade? Why do you want to get a new machine?
Well, so much of the software only runs on the new XP, XP won't run on older machines, like CorelDRAW 12. Almost everything in the engraving industry is runs on Corel Draw, you know, for modifying graphics and stuff like that to be exported to your engraver.
Yeah, that's an old world there. It's kind of going back.
Like I have Corel Draw 4, which is ancient history.
I would. It's going to be kind of difficult, but I would.
So, do you not have a computer at all?
Yeah, I have a computer, but it's getting kind of ragged.
Yeah. I would go ahead and try to find another a newer, better motherboard with ISA on it, and install Windows 98. And the difficulty is you're not going to be able to buy a brand new machine with ISA, and people aren't going to be like, I'm selling my computer and it's got ISA slots, because that's not really a selling feature. So the way to do that is to visit a local computer store and say, I really need something like this, and it's kind of a specialty item because I've got an engraver, and I'd like to get, you know, I'd like to get a beefed up system, but I need to have that card, and I'm going to need to run Windows 98. And they'll probably have a really inexpensive board, and they'll charge you for the setup time. So it wouldn't be a bad thing to do.
So you won't be able to run a Pentium 4 or an Athlon 64. It's going to be an Athlon XP processor or a Pentium 3. It's not going to use DDR memory, which is the latest. It's going to use SDR. So what I'm saying is a lot of these parts you can find at old computer stores. So that's what I would do. I'd track down a local ma-pa computer store, and those guys could help you because they get a lot of old hardware in, and their job is to make it run. You know,
they have a rocking chair in the window. That's where I want to go.
That's the way to go. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, that was Ed from Paso Robles. We're going to take a call off air. Sharon from Aptos, cell technology. Why, when she goes into an office, does this reception drop? But more importantly, when she's standing in the same spot, depending on different times, the cell phone works or doesn't work. Or while she's on a call and she's not moving, the cell phone drops out. Why does that happen? Miles, Sean, you got an answer to this? No. All right, I do. So I'll ask the question and answer it. So the basic problem is, the reason this happens is that there's a thing called multipathing or other similar effects caused with radiating signals. That's what radio is. That's what cell phone technology is you're using electromagnetic spectrum to send information. And when it starts bouncing off structures, you get side effects that are quite confusing to the receiving end. So I'm not going to go into the full effects of why this happens, partially because it would be too confusing, but more accurately because I wouldn't be accurate, because I don't know the answer. But what's happening when you're dealing with a cell phone is you're dealing with multiple cell sites, and the cell phone's trying to pick the best site. And to do that, it has to communicate back to the cell phone. It looks for a powerful signal. When it finds a more powerful signal than the one it's currently connected to, it automatically moves its communication to the other cell phone. But
It's
supposed to. But the problem in a situation where you're in an environment like that is that if you can imagine it kind of like you're in a small pool of water that's at about the same level as a large pool. And when the water comes into that small pool, you see a whole bunch of rippling effects. It's kind of like a hot tub next to a large pool, and someone's diving into the diving board. So all of a sudden, the hot tub's just choppy and all weird. The swimming pool is relatively calm, so you're inside that choppiness. And when you're inside that choppiness, sometimes a cell phone tower that's a long ways away looks like a bigger signal to the phone. It tries to connect to it. It can't connect to it because it doesn't have enough output to get to it. So then it gets confused. And that's what's happening inside that environment. The cell phone, which is a really sophisticated piece of technology, is getting confused by physics.
So one way to solve that, after a call to Singular, I kind of went through this, because I live up in the mountains. The recommendation was to turn the cell phone off once a day and turn it back on to reestablish a connection with the closer cell tower.
It should be doing it automatically.
And that helped.
Does help?
Yeah. I don't think it's a very solution.
But we've got lots of we've got lots of calls. I'm going to go ahead and go to an old friend and buddy of mine, Mr. Brenner. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey, Lyle. It's Steve. How are you?
It's quite well, and it's good to hear from you. What's up?
Good here. Oh, I got a question. I've been using a Mac Mini as my main office computer for about 5 months now. I'm real happy with it, except it runs slower than I'd really like. It actually runs a little bit slower than the old computer I replaced in certain applications. I've got plenty of memory in it. So what I'm thinking about doing is buying one of these newer technology mini stacks which have a much faster hard drive in it, because I think it's just close to that slow hard drive in it. Now, I read on the web, and we know everything we read on the web is true, that a guy was saying how he hooked this up to his mini and he made the hard drive, which is a FireWire drive on this mini stack, his startup disk, and he ran much faster. Does that make any sense?
Well, yeah, partially. The Mac Mini, I'm not sure what kind of hard drive's in it.
It's a 5200, I think, or 5800. Yeah, it's like a laptop hard drive.
Yeah, that'll definitely do it. 5200 spindle cycles, a lot slower. Whether it is slower than FireWire 400, which would be the connection type you're probably using on an external drive. Sean, do you know the throughput of a FireWire 400 cable?
Yeah, it's about 40 megabytes per second.
Is that faster than a 5200 spindle speed?
No. I wouldn't know.
So if you've got the seek time might be better.
It could be. Yeah. Modern, like newer, yeah, it could be. So a 5400 RPM hard drive,
which is inside the computer,
is much slower and quieter and usually larger capacity. It'd be close. I don't know. It could be close.
Steve, I would try it out. And the worst case is you're going to have a nice big hard drive, external hard drive.
Right. Well, yeah. I've got an 80 megabyte hard drive in the Mini, and then in the newer technology Mini Stack, you can get any size you want.
When you say Mini Stack, I'm not even familiar with a Mini Stack.
What it is it's the same dimensions as a Mini. So you sit the Mini right on top of it,
uh-huh.
And it's got either a USB or FireWire interface to the hard drive that's inside it. But it also acts as a hub. It's also a FireWire hub.
Oh, cool.
And
yeah,
a USB
cool.
hub, so, all in one little package.
That's nice. You're
really
extending the Mac Mini.
They actually got, I think, one of the Products of the Year award from Macworld.
Yeah,
nice product.
I got to say that I think if you even USB 2 or FireWire 400, especially if this thing has FireWire 800 and the Mac Mini has FireWire 800, booting off of that other drive, which is going to be faster, make sure you get at least a 7200 RPM drive inside that stack.
But I mean, you're doing it the right way, though.
Yeah, it should definitely boot faster.
Getting a slower drive for your external device, 5400 RPM. You'll get a larger capacity usually same price as a high-end.
Sean, he's going to get a 7200 RPM or faster drive for the external drive and boot off of that because the internal Mac Mini has a laptop drive in it. And and by the way, you could, of course, if you wanted to, buy a really expensive laptop hard drive that's 72 RPM and put it in the Mac Mini.
Right.
But I wouldn't do that.
This sounds like a much better option.
I agree.
Just a plug and play kind of thing from external. The only thing my question was, to get back to the original question is it's sort of counterintuitive that even a really fast FireWire connection would be faster than the internal, I don't know what the bus is on a Mac Mini between the
It's not the bus though. It's that the FireWire we're kind of guessing, is faster than the spindle or the seek time of the 5400 drive.
Okay.
So if you, for example, if you plugged a 7200 drive inside,
you're wasting a lot of good hardware because the USB connection on a 7200 RPM hard drive, the performance, you're cutting the performance off on the hard drive because that link cannot handle the amount of data coming off the hard drive.
FireWire or USB?
FireWire or USB. Because most modern 7200 RPM hard drives can transfer data at like 55, 60 megabytes per second.
Right, but what's a 54 doing? What's its speed?
It might still 54 be faster than the hard drive that's in there.
Right. It'd probably still be faster.
But not as fast.
It's
going to
be cheaper, and it's not going to run as hot as a 7200 RPM hard drive.
Right.
So when you put a 7200 hard drive in an external case, they run really hot.
Right, well, this thing has a fan.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
I think, Steve, the basic premise is you're not going to be going as fast as if you put a 7200 inside the Mac Mini, but doing that's going to do a whole bunch of things to your Mac Mini.
It'll be noticeably slower. There's overhead through that connection.
It'll be faster than the current 5400.
I'm just saying that putting the hard drive in the case itself.
Right. It's going to be, okay.
There you go.
And you'll lose your bursts. So hard drives do burst of data, and you won't get any of that.
Steve, let us know how it goes. I'm really curious.
Yeah, I'm seriously thinking about doing it. I will let you know.
All
good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve.
Bye.
So we have an email. This was from David from Devo. You know who that is, Lyle? Devo?
Maybe, but go on.
All right, so he wants to know, is there a better file system than FAT32? That could be used with both Windows and Macintosh Linux, particularly one with journaling file system, because FAT32 is a little unstable when you move a drive back and forth. And, it's funny, Chris replied to this. Chris, you there?
No, we lost Chris earlier.
All right, so he said that, this is the only one that's supported by both Mac and Windows, and NTFS is proprietary and locked down with patents.
Right.
Well, just so people know, Microsoft just won the right to patent, where they just won the case for FAT as well. So now anyone with portable digital cameras, audio players, video players, any small devices that use FAT are going to have to pay royalty payments to to Microsoft at 25 mm-hmm. cents per unit.
Ouch.
So
we could see an explosion of a new filing system that's free and open source.
We certainly could.
There are actually a lot of open source ones out there, but the big players normally get their own proprietary. So Apple has Apple File System, or AFS, and Microsoft has the NFS. Apple Macintosh, if you want to just do reading and you don't want to do writing from the Macintosh environment, Macintosh can read the NTFS file system fine. It's writing to it that will mess it up, and you don't. So that's the only caveat. Yep. I would say that no, at this point, there is no solution provided that allows you to read and write from Windows and Mac, except for FAT32, unless you want to get really confusing,
or if you want to connect on a local area network.
Yeah,
for example, just copying directly from one computer to another.
That's one way to do it, yeah.
Opposed to transferring to a hard drive and then disconnecting the hard drive from one computer and connecting to the other.
Right, and then you're using the operating systems to talk to each other.
Right.
And they do the translation for you of transferring the files. All right, we're going to go ahead and go to the next call. We have Woody from Santa Cruz. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm running a Windows XP. I get this error message that shuts me down a lot in some of the programs I'm using, most notably, like I have Nero DVD software and stuff. But it's a Microsoft Visual C++ runtime library. It says it's a runtime error, R6025 pure virtual function call, and it will shut down that program. It comes up in Picasa sometimes too when I'm photo editing, and I don't know what to do about it.
Luckily we have Miles in the house. Miles, what's
Miles,
going on?
Save me, Miles. Save me from my Windows transgression.
I'm sorry.
So basically he's getting Visual C++ runtime errors in Windows on some applications, including a Google's Picasa. What could it be?
That's a fine question, Lyle.
Your computer busted. I'll go ahead and take a stab at it that something's wrong with your computer.
Okay. Let me just add one other
how
thing.
How do we fix it?
I've tried to I have the software and stuff, so I've tried to reinstall. And because I've done service packs, Windows in its infinite wisdom says, oh, no, you're running a newer version. I'm not going to let you reinstall. I can't even reinstall my software. So I'm like, oh, that's crazy because I've done service packs upgrades.
Right.
So because I'm running newer and it won't let me reinstall, so I don't even know what to do.
Sean, how do you deal with this issue? You get your computer. It comes with Windows XP. It's Service Pack 1 or before Service Pack 1.
Yeah.
You've upgraded your computer by going online and doing a whole bunch of Service Pack updates to Service Pack 2. Now your computer has some problems and you want to fix them. You can't reinstall Windows the disk you have because it's an older version of Windows. How do you deal with it?
You can.
How do you force it?
All right, so it's kind of a long process. You want to get rid of your current version of Windows completely.
He doesn't really. He just wants to fix this little runtime error that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tough.
what us geeks do...
Long pause for effect here.
What us geeks do normally is take another hard drive and just put it as the primary install operating system over
here. What you can do is...
Here's a little problem. I'm running a RAID, you know? And so I've got everything is on... You know, if I took one... It's not like I have my OS on one hard drive and I get, all the other stuff. So it's all kind of tight. I know when I go down, I've got, days of work because I've got... So
you can do a file system recovery.
So
you boot off of your Windows XP disk.
Uh-huh.
And when it says, to boot off the CD, you say yes. It's going to go through the Windows install. There'll be a recovery console. It'll say, do you want to recover? It's something about a system. It'll want you to go to a system console. You say no. Pass that option. It'll find your version of Windows.
Yeah.
That recovery option will allow you to...
And then it will say there's a
recovery. To reinstall all your basic Windows... files, but it won't touch anything else about it. But you'll pretty much go through the Windows install again.
Right.
You'll end up back in Windows.
But it'll be the older version.
Yeah, and you'll need to rerun the Service Pack 2 at that point.
Right.
But hopefully that'll fix your issue.
So it's file system and it's recovery, not like fresh install or something.
Right. You just need to pass that first recovery option,
okay.
Which says, system console recovery, because that'll drop you at a DOS prompt. And you won't know what to do.
Oh, yeah, I don't do DOS, sorry.
Yeah.
I don't. Friends don't love friends DOS.
Thank you, Woody, for the call.
All right.
We're only going to take one more call, and it's Bruce from Seaside. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm one of your faithful listeners. First of all, thanks for getting this excellent slot of time. Working folks can listen to your program now.
Hey, and working folks can actually be on the program, which is another reason why we did it. So, yes, thank you.
And we're working folks, and our bosses like us better because we...
So, Bruce, what's your question? What's the problem down
south? Okay. I'm going to have to wait until next week because it's more of a philosophical thing. I need help. We have a software company. I need help. And the best people for the job, I've realized, are my kids. But they do work, and I paid them well to the point where... They don't really want, they don't need any money. They get plenty of attention. And they're saying, why should I worry about doing this programming stuff? So it's a philosophical question. How do you get kids motivated to actually do programming?
So you really want like a slave labor camp for your children.
And well, that's the negative way of looking at it. The positive way of looking at it is they become part of everything. They have a... place in the world. They're taking their place in the world. They're making a difference.
Okay, let me ask you, what is this programming that you want them to get motivated and enjoy? Is it like driver-based seed programming? Or?
No. It's pretty simple standard stuff. It's PHP.
Okay.
Yeah, which is a pretty simple programming language.
Okay, well, what are they into? How old are they?
Anime, 14 and 16. Their big loves in life are anime and studying Japanese. And
are they involved in like local networks like MySpace and things like that?
I don't think so.
Okay, so
actually, no.
Okay, so one thing you could do, since you're a web person, you could start trying to support. I mean, that's one way. Try to get them interested because they want to build something that will support their hobby. That's why I always do it. Like, mm-hmm. I normally build web apps and stuff to support photography or things that I'm, or like radio, because I kind of like radio. So that's one way to go. But you know what? Philosophical is going to have to wait to some degree because we are running out of time on Geek Speak. Curious question.
I would like to talk about this more.
I would too. Yeah. We will, of course, be back next week, and I'd love to take it. You can email us too if you go to geekspeak.org, and we might take some of this discussion offline. Thank mm-hmm. you very much for the call, and good luck with your kids.
Thank you.
Thanks. This program is supported by a grant from CruiseIO, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about CruiseIO membership is available online at CruiseIO.com or by calling 459-6301. Thank you for joining us on GeekSpeak, including the geeks that joined us. Thank you for calling in. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Otto, or on the web at kosp.org.